Why don't you tell them all about Phyllis Schlafly?
Well, Phyllis Schlafly was born August 15th, 1924, in St. Louis, Missouri. You pronounce her name Phyllis.
That's going to be on the AP.
Why don't you get to the stuff about the Equal Rights Amendment right on
no,
the
No, 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 that's important, class.
Exhaustive breath, that's true. If you know the birth date of Phyllis Schlafly, you're getting a 5 on
Exactly. She's an American conservative political activist and constitutional attorney known for her opposition to feminism and the Equal Rights Amendment. Her best-selling book, A Choice, Not an Echo, was published in 1964 from her home in Alton, Illinois, across the Mississippi River from her native St. Louis.
All right, now you should have read that pretending that you knew it and not that I just gave you the page. You should have been like, oh, off the top of my head.
But that's
Phyllis Schlafly. Now, listen, one of the other women that you want to know about the time period of the 70s, Betty Friedan, she comes up, I would say, like almost every year. If you see anything about the Girl Scouts, the Brownies, selling cookies.
Ooh, I used to be a brownie.
Just remember Betty Friedan.
I used to be an eagle.
An Eagle Scout? Yeah.
That's great. Betty Friedan is usually the answer, but for this particular
question, there was a question specifically about Betty Friedan? Did I?
Yes, it was one of the practices. It involved the Girl Scouts. All right, well, thank you very much for your call, sir.
I guess I got that one.
Thank you, Alexander.
No, you're not supposed to know the callers, Eddie Grove. All right, so the phone lines are now open, 767-5998. I find that the harder questions on the AP exam, the ones that you want to omit, are the ones that when it says, like, it links a person with something that they wrote or something that they did.
Those are
very hard questions, and sometimes you know it. I have a bunch of them on the review sheet, but sometimes you know you don't. And the question becomes, well, how many of these questions should I leave out? Do I leave out the Phyllis Schlafly question? You probably do. But sometimes you know it, sometimes you don't. And those are – remember, you're entitled to leave stuff out. You're entitled to get a few wrong on this test. So does anybody want to share a strategy that they would have with leaving things out? Marco?
Well, what I was going to say before about the people is that the way I approach that is that I remember specific ideas associated with each person. And so whenever a question about them comes up, I'm looking for the answer that most directly relates to that idea. And vice versa, if that idea comes up, I'm looking for that specific person. But if I don't know it, I'm going to leave it blank and then come back to it if I have extra time. And usually I want to leave between zero and five questions blank.
That's usually a good strategy. Or you can come up with little mnemonic devices like Betty Friedan. You remember Betty Friedan. And you can think of Betty Crocker. And then you can think of
Betty
different
Friedan
cookies.
Sounds like a Girl Scout.
So
if I were to think of somebody who was a Girl Scout and think of their name, Betty. It would be Betty Friedan. Yeah.
I think of Betty White, who played Rose in The Golden Girls, but that's just my opinion. 767-5998. Let's continue with what we were talking about before as the calls come in. Regarding your essay strategy for the Star 16, which is your populist era.
Yes.
Now, remember, of the four things there, the STA and R, the senators, the taxes, the Australian ballot, and the railroads, those all became true during the progressive era, and those happened. We need to know certain amendments for that, too. So when did we get direct election of senators? Eddie Grove!
Early 1900s, right?
You can give me, 1913, but give me the amendment.
It was the 17th.
Very good. And when did we get the graduated income tax?
16th
Amendment. All right. And then
the tax, right.
Yes.
Wait, what is the 11th Amendment?
That has to do – you don't have to worry about that. It has to do with
interstate
commerce and stuff like that. Yeah, you don't worry about that. What you do need to know is something similar is the court case McCulloch versus Maryland where
– the power to tax, power to destroy.
Very impressive.
Whoa. Right, because Maryland was trying to tax the National Bank.
Wow, I'm sweating here. That was impressive. So that's obviously a good thing to know as well. So in the progressive era, a lot of these things became law. They became fact. And that you have there, the Australian ballot came in as well, and the government regulation of railroads came in also. So those are some of the important things you need to know about the progressive era. But there are other progressive reforms, such as?
We said that.
There are like 10 other ones.
Well, the temperance movement.
Okay, well, the temperance movement, which leads to something in the progressive era, the 18th Amendment, which is prohibition, yep. So that's another one you can throw in there for the progressive. You should make like a balloon and just kind of throw all these things into the balloon. So, yes, temperance.
The Food and Drug Act?
That's a big one. The Food and Drug Act, the Meat Inspecting Act, the Inspection Act.
Just
the Food and Drug Act creates the FDA.
Right?
Trust busting in general. You could put that in there. Teddy Roosevelt. Remember, your two progressive presidents are Teddy Roosevelt as well as Woodrow Wilson. And Wilson gave us the Underwood Tariff and in the Clayton Antitrust Act, which reaffirmed the Sherman Antitrust Act, which
John
had bad
Muir
wording.
John Muir and the environment.
Conservation.
Yes.
Movement.
Conservation, right.
Conservation.
And Pinchot.
The Federal Trade Commission, that was that?
The FTC is also part of the – that was absolutely part of the progressive era all because right. – now remember what all this does is it increases the size of the bureaucracies. So sometimes people don't like that. The bureaucracy gets too big at all. So that's another thing to know about. So we have those progressive things, and then all of that from the progressive era. Is there anything anybody would like to add on the progressive era?
FDA? End with the Red Scare?
Yes, because of this leftist movement, people think
all conservative stuff.
Yes, it does indeed end with the leftist movement. So
also World War One took attention.
All of that leads to the New Deal.
Yeah.
So who would like to start us on the New Deal? What do we want to say about the New Deal? All those things. We got to know the alphabet soup.
Hit alphabet soup.
You gotta know.
Should we go through different ones?
Sure.
Well, the first one that Roosevelt enacted the moment he got into office, he actually skipped the opening balls to start this was the banking. He took care of the banking crisis by calling a national bank holiday for all of the banks, just so people would calm down and stop freaking out, and that just preserves some of the integrity of the banks.
So you just shut the banks down.
And don't forget also, you know, the names of the two acts. You have two acts. You have the Emergency Banking Act as well as the Glass-Steagall Banking Act. So that also provides for the FDIC. Do you remember what the FDIC is?
The Federal Deposit and Insurance
Corporation, right?
That's great. Yeah, that was impressive. I want to see you guys arm wrestle too. yes. And how much money does that insure us today?
$200,000.
Yeah, they just upped
it. Just raised it from $100,000.
It was $100,000. So that's important to know, too, on the New Deal reform. So here we are. We're talking New Deal. You can call us up. Now is when the show was supposed to start, but we started 15 minutes early because we wanted to. 767-5998. If you would like to go on the air, give us a call. And if you have any questions regarding the APUS test that is in 2.5 days, you can give us a call at 767-5998. So the New Deal is a important thing besides the banking. We also have other problems, such as what?
The Dust Bowl.
Okay, you have agricultural problems. What happened with agriculture?
Well, there was a large overproduction in the 1920s, which depressed the entire industry. So when FDR took office, he wanted to have some price controls and production controls so that there wouldn't be this abundance of produce, and so that the prices would go up and help the farmers.
And I think it's important for us to understand just how important that concept of overproduction of crops is. That all goes back to populism about supply and demand. Who remembers what we're talking about in terms of why there was an abundance of crops?
Yes. Probably somebody I texted.
Explain that. Why was there an abundance of crops?
Well, there's an abundance of crops because farm machinery was getting constantly better with machines such as the McCormick Reaper Thrasher and the steel plow. But at the same time, mortgages remained static, but because prices were going down, farmers had more trouble paying off the mortgages, so they wanted inflation.
All right, but also don't forget that the farmers were trying to pay off their mortgages, and they were all in debt, so they started to pay up more crops. Oh, we'll go into that later. We have another call. Once again, 767-5998. If you'd like to call in with a question about your test coming up in several days.
Hello, you are on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Did you put speakers there?
I did.
You did? Did we hang up on our caller?
I hope not.
Oh, that would be so sad. All right. We'll ask the caller to call back at 5998. So, hold on.
I wish I knew who it was because I could text them back.
It's all right. So regarding that, with the overproduction of crops, populists were trying to pay off their mortgages. And to pay off their mortgages, they needed to make more crops, but it's simple supply and demand. If you make too many crops, it's going to decrease the price of the crops. And if you decrease the price of the crops, you have to make more and more crops to kind of pay off your mortgage. So that's why there was this kind of this spiral out of control overproduction of crops that was going on in the populist era. So that's important to understand for why you would need the AAA, the Agricultural Adjustment Act. And the Agricultural Adjustment Act did what?
It set production controls and it paid farmers to plow under some of their crops so that instead of producing more and more crops, there would be a limited supply, which would increase the demand and therefore increase the price.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Alright, so as long as she's on the phone, let's do other alphabet soup Sarah? Stuff.
Am I picking up?
Oh, wait, is she picking up? Never mind.
Hello?
Yes, I have a call.
Hi, Mr. Glass.
Am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Oh, great. I was wondering if you could tell me about the Alien and Sedition Acts.
Well, anonymous caller. The Alien and Sedition Acts were under the Adams administration. And basically, the Alien Acts were to keep out foreigners, and the Sedition Acts were to stop people from speaking out against the government.
Yes, and remember that. Hold on for the mic.
Anyone who said false or malicious statements about the government.
Yes,
there you go.
And remember, of course, those led to what?
Kentucky and Virginia resolution.
Very impressive, which of course were penned by who?
Jefferson.
Madison. And
Madison. Yes, Madison and Jefferson. And that said that the government or the states can declare acts of Congress unconstitutional. And by doing that, that of course goes against all the principles that the country was founded on after you had the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution. Very impressive. Thank you, caller. Once again, 767-5998, if you would like to call in to the AP review session. So Dylan's going to be getting the phone and transferring stuff over. And as he does get the phone and transfer some calls over, I think it's an important time period to understand the – hold on. We'll get into that later. All right. Dylan's transferring the caller over. Sarah, be nice to this caller. The last one hung up on you. They got scared.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, I'm supposed to call this number for an APUS question.
Yes.
Hi.
Shoot.
Okay, I was wondering what the actual year that the Civil War was started. Like, what year would you consider the actual start?
April 12th, 1861 was the Battle of Fort Sumter.
That's great. Take that, Marco. Marco picked up the book and Sarah went off the top of her head.
The radio thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, so hang up the call there, Sarah. Thank you. So we'll keep the line open. Thank you for your call.
Bye.
The Civil War, you really don't have to know so much about dates. Of course, the Civil War started with Fort Sumter. That would probably fall into the exhaustive breadth that you may want to talk about in an essay. You may want to bring it up, you know, when it talks about Civil War or Reconstruction. You may want to say in your first paragraph, the Civil War, that was from 1861 to 1865 and began in Fort Sumter, etc. You know, that might be a very good thing for you to kind of throw in. That's where the exhaustive breath comes from, you know, little tidbits about that. So knowing your chronology, they're not going to give you a question on the AP exam, like what year did it start in. But what they could do is they may give you a map and say, what year was this map drawn? Was it in 1820? So you need to know basic chronology, like the Missouri Compromise or something like that. So thank you for the call. 767-5998. While we're on the topic of Civil War, of course, we should probably be talking about Reconstruction, another very important thing that comes up. The Reconstruction is divided between – yes, Eric Foner. Yes. You can say that on the air, Mark Pucci. You don't have to laugh. Eric Foner, who wrote the short history of Reconstruction – his father was also a historian – he wrote about the facts of Reconstruction and talks about radical Reconstruction and the controversy that involved the presidential Reconstruction and congressional Reconstruction. Now, we have to distinguish between the two Reconstructions. And hey, Grove, everything you say can be heard on the air.
Yeah.
When you whisper to Sarah, it comes out. So I lose my train of thought. So, all right, we'll take this call, and I'll get back on Reconstruction shortly. What were we talking about?
Reconstruction.
Foner. Yes. We were talking about Foner.
Eric Foner wrote about the short history of Reconstruction and the Amendments 13, 14, and 15. Can you tell me what the Amendments 13, 14, and 15 are?
Abolish slavery, get citizenship and right to vote. Am I right?
You are correct, sir.
Again?
Citizenship and right to vote.
Abolish Abolishment of slavery, 1865, right, 1867, the citizenship rights, and of course
1870, the right to vote.
All right, we're
and that's the long and the short of the of the Reconstruction amendments. Now, we need to understand about the harsh Reconstruction. Tell us about the Reconstruction Act of 1867. Dylan's going to take this one.
I have no idea. Pass.
Anyone? 1867? Eddie Grove.
That was that it divided the South into five military districts, right, until the states could be readmitted to the Union. And it also required the states to draft a constitution in which they gave blacks the right to vote.
Brilliant. I wasn't really listening to you, but I'm going to assume it was right. And, of course, the 1867 was when you have a turning point in Reconstruction, when you're going to have what happened was General Schurz went down to the South and realized that black codes were being enforced and that presidential Reconstruction or lenient Reconstruction under Johnson was not going so well. Of course, Johnson was vetoing everything. What happened to Johnson?
He got impeached
but not
he got rid of Edward M. Stanton.
What did he violate? What
tenure and office act.
Tenure of office act.
Very impressive. Sarah Pierce, why don't you give all the presidents an order right now as we tell people to call in at 767-5998.
All right. Are you ready?
We're so ready.
Okay. Someone's going to call
Here
in just a minute.
Okay, then I'll have to stop. Okay. Sorry if I mess up. Okay.
Oh. All right, go ahead. Go ahead. Don't worry. We'll hold the call. We'll hold the calls.
We can't hold the calls.
Guys, by the way, one of the things you learn in radio, too, is when people call, don't get excited. It makes you seem like you're not cool.
Who's this?
You got to be like, the phone's always ringing. You can't be like into that.
Can we be selective about who we pick up?
All right, so go ahead. Give us all the presidents before we transfer this.
No, we can transfer it first.
You don't know the presidents in order? Is that it?
Well, I do.
Are what are Scalawags and Carpetbaggers?
Carpetbaggers.
All right, we're going to transfer a call.
Tell me later.
I think it's Remler calling in with a female voice.
No, it's
voice,
not.
But
it's Megan.
Oh.
You're not supposed to know.
You're not supposed to know, Eddie.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, I have a question. Can you explain to me the difference between Jeffersonian and Jacksonian democracy?
We can.
Who wants to take that one?
Let's jointly take it. Well, Jeffersonian democracy obviously came earlier and was less advanced and also was, it was less widespread because once Jefferson came into office, he acted just as much like a Federalist as he did like a Republican, especially in the Louisiana Purchase because he used implied powers and the power of treaty. Jackson also favored industry, whereas Jefferson favored the farmer. In Jackson's case, Jackson had a high tariff, but at the same time favored direct primaries, and what am I missing, guys? Chime in.
The key is that Jefferson was all about the farmer, the
human.
American farmer, human farmer, exactly, that would keep the power of government small and make all the decisions, whereas Jackson was universal white male suffrage, so everybody and anybody, it doesn't matter your profession.
And a big thing is that Jefferson was, he always preached very strict interpretation of the Constitution, but as soon as Jackson got in, he would disobey the Supreme Court, and didn't he say something like, Marshall made a decision that seemed enforced about the Trail of Tears?
And Jefferson also accepted the bank, whereas Jackson vetoed it.
Yes, I was just going to say that. You could also argue that Jefferson understood the economy much better than Jackson did, because Jefferson, although he thought that the National Bank did favor the northern industry, he recognized that although it wasn't maybe necessary, it definitely would help the economy of the nation. Whereas Jackson vetoed the second bank charter of the United States over and over, and he implemented the specie circular, which really hurt the economy in the end and was repealed in the final months of his office.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Megan, for the call.
Sorry,
I think her cell phone was on, the last battery. All right, we have another call, so we're going to transfer. We can actually
person. Random person who I text.
998.
You
couldn't hear that. I just said you can call in. We could take two calls at a time. 767-5998. You can get it.
Hello, caller. You are on the air.
What's up?
Hello. Hello.
Guess you're not on the air.
No.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, just call back.
It says Volpe
caller,
David.
Here.
Volpe.
Justin.
We'll ask the caller to call back, as cell phones must sometimes die. That's what happens. Well, there's a little static there also.
I got a question.
Yes.
What was the OT Nice Treaty or whatever. The
Adamonese Treaty of 1819?
I don't think it was that.
The Otteness Manifesto? Otteness
Manifesto, that was the word.
Ostend Manifesto.
Oh, the Ostend, that's, that came up in class the other day. You don't remember the answer? We went over that.
No, we didn't.
It involved, America.
You said we didn't need to know it.
You don't.
And it was on our final.
It wasn't an answer. It has to do with America going into. All right, transfer the call. It has to do with America like taking over Cuba.
Does anybody know what the answer to that question was?
The Fillmore administration.
We have another call.
You don't need to know that. You should have crossed it out of your as a choice. All right, let's get the call.
Hello, caller.
You're on the air.
Hey, I got a question.
Yes.
Who was John Muir?
John Muir was a conservationist during the. Progressive era. He gave his name to many different outdoor tracts out west. He loved the Sierras, in particular the Sierra Nevada, and he really helped to start the conservation movement in the United States.
Thanks, Eddie.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
All right. Thank you for the call. 767-5998. Conservationism, of course, we have to know about. Teddy Roosevelt, and of course there are other things to know about Teddy Roosevelt, for instance, trust busting. And he broke up certain places. You guys know which in particular he broke up? Two major companies that were broken up under the Teddy Roosevelt
administration. Rockefeller Standard Oil.
Standard Oil.
He made it break up into two.
Yes, it became Esso and Mobil, and that became Esso, became Exxon. And, of course, the Northern Securities Company, which was a railroad company. Now, there weren't a lot of trusts that were broken up during this time of Teddy Roosevelt because the Sherman Antitrust Act had some bad wording. In fact, the Sherman Antitrust Act, which was supposed to help consumers, it hurt consumers at times because it broke up labor. It was used to break up unions, and of course we know unions help the workers out. So that's an important thing to know. You guys are right on top of your game. Sarah, why don't we take the next call at 767-5998. Why don't you now give all the president's order? Because we've been promising you for 35
so
minutes
long.
That you were going to do it, and then you always get a caller.
Okay. Ready? Here I go.
It's exciting. Okay. Oh, we got a call. Oh. No, I'm kidding. Just go ahead.
Okay. Washington?
Miss Flapper.
Oh, wait. Oh, I have to reaffirm. Oh, that comes up. Yeah, hold on. I'll fix that. Keep talking.
No, but I can't.
Do you guys
I need to use my thing.
Mueller versus Oregon is.
Pick up the thing that fell.
All right.
But while this is being fixed, Andrew Minicucci will take you through Mueller versus Oregon.
No, I asked, what is it?
What is it?
Which was a court case.
I don't see it. That is not on the
All right, if you're just joining us, you're listening to WDOT Port Washington, the AP U.S. review session. You can call us at 516-767-5998, and we will have our table of geniuses here answer your questions to the best of their ability. And that's right, Eddie Grove's here. That's all you need to know. All right, call in.
Eddie is here.
Well,
why we're not going to say last names?
No.
It's okay.
All right.
There are only a few decisions that you actually need to know for the AP test. Those are mainly the decisions that affected the most people and the most of the policy in the U.S. And the first one you need to know is Marbury versus Madison, which established the right of judicial review. It came about from the case of the midnight judges appointed by appointed by Adams.
They were appointed by Adams.
Appointed by Adams as he left office.
One of which was Marbury.
Yeah, and Marbury never received his commission, so he sued.
Right, but the most important thing is judicial review, which was set about by John Marshall, the head of the Supreme Court. The next
one. What is judicial review?
Right, what is judicial review? Well, judicial review is the power the Supreme Court has to declare an act of Congress unconstitutional, which is. A very key factor in the separation of the powers between the legislative, the executive, and the judicial branch.
Because it puts an additional check on Congress and gives equal power to the judicial branch, which didn't really exist before the principle of judicial review was established.
It was by far the weakest branch of government prior to that.
And now one could argue that it's the strongest branch because it has the power to declare any acts of the other two branches to be unconstitutional. So you could say that the Supreme Court, as a result of John Marshall, now has pretty much the last word.
Right, although it's more of a reactionary kind of a method because it's not adapting any policy. It's just checking them and making sure they're in accordance with the Constitution.
Right.
So the next court case we have is McCulloch versus Maryland, which we actually went over a little bit before. It was the Maryland was trying to
tax a federal bank.
Yeah. And the Supreme Court nixed this, and it expanded federal power over the states. And that's the basis of this decision.
Marshall declared the power to tax is a power to destroy, so a state cannot tax federal power. Is that what it was?
Yes, because exactly. In that case, the state would be able to destroy the federal agency, which obviously is unconstitutional.
Right.
Moving along to 1857, and now the slavery issue. So first we have Dred Scott versus Sanford, which is a very influential case because it declares that all African-Americans were not citizens. And they were the property of their owners, because what had happened is Dred Scott had moved into a free state with his owner. And when he moved back, he sued for his freedom. But the Supreme Court said he could not be free because he was not a citizen of the United States. And that he was the property of his owner.
And not only that, it basically repealed the Missouri Compromise and the Compromise of 1850, which both stated that Congress could and would restrict the expansion of slavery into the territories, whereas with Dred Scott stated that Congress could not do that because Congress could not deny someone, a U.S. citizen, the right to own property.
Right, so that was a very big hit for the abolitionists and the anti-slavery, because they saw the spread of slavery as the rise of Southern power, and this led to a lot of sectionalism between the North and the South, resulting in the Civil War.
Yes.
Get a cause of the Civil War essay that's got to be in it.
Exactly. And another big one is also relating to black rights, the Plessy versus Ferguson case, which was just a little bit after the Reconstruction. It was in 1896, which was after the Jim Crow laws and the black codes were set up in the South. And what the case was having a separate train car for blacks and whites, was that constitutional? And what the Supreme Court said was it was very constitutional as long as the accommodations were equal. So that the main idea between Plessy versus Ferguson was separate but equal is okay. And I'm going to skip ahead now to the Brown versus Board of Education in 1954, which basically reversed that earlier decision in Plessy versus Ferguson. It declared separate but equal to have no place in a school setting, and it declared it to be unconstitutional.
I have a question, if that's all right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. This has come up in like three of the review tests and on the final. What is the Taft-Hartley Act?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that today. I had a feeling it was something to do with restriction of unions, right?
Yeah, the Taft-Hartley Act was Taft was the President Taft's son, who was actually a Republican in Congress, and it was enacted after the First World War, I think. Under whoever was after Wilson.
1947.
Oh,
never mind. After the second,
I wasn't listening.
After
and
Wilson.
After.
Well, because I know the President's order, I know that after Wilson comes Harding.
Right. So under Harding, and it was basically a nixing of some of the progressive support for labor unions, because it diminished the power of labor unions, and it was a conservative reaction to the labor movement. And we actually heard it's 1947,
so it's not under
President Truman, and yes, not after World War I and Wilson. It's actually after World War II and under President Truman.
Sorry about that. Can I list all the presidents in order now?
Caller.
That's ridiculous.
Don't worry about it. Just answer it. And eventually we'll allow you to do your presidents in order.
But the callers are just pouring in.
I know.
Everyone wants, the caller hung up.
Everyone, oh, that caller hung up. Everyone okay. wants review. Once again, yes, the phone lines are ringing. We're trying to get to all the calls. It's 767-598.
Do you have to see the number?
You're just joining us. We're here with Sarah, Marco, Eddie, and Andrew, as well as Dylan, who will be screening all the calls. And we've been on the air for about 40 minutes. We feel like we're doing good for society.
We are.
And Sarah is doing her best to tell us all the presidents in order. And every time she starts to say them, or either a microphone breaks, which we're trying to repair now, or a phone rings. So, Sarah, why don't you once again, as we promise you, to give the presidents in order, and I will verify if they are correct. Because you never know okay. when that's going to put on the test. They're going to say, turn around your test for a bonus. Name all the presidents in order.
I just have one question.
Yes.
When was President... Who was before President Fillmore?
I can't tell you that. You said you were going to get them in order.
No, but I know them.
Oh. Taylor.
It was Taylor? Okay, good. Okay, now I can do it.
None of them did anything.
Ready?
Yes. Dylan just informed me that everything I just said wasn't good because my mic wasn't on. But go ahead.
No, I heard you.
Oh, okay. Because I'm standing right next to you.
Okay, whatever. Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Quincy Adams, Jackson, Van Buren, Harrison, Tyler, Polk, Taylor, Fillmore, Pierce, Buchanan, Lincoln, Johnson, Grant, Hayes, Garfield, Arthur, Cleveland, Harrison, Cleveland, McKinley, Teddy, Taft, Wilson, Harding, Coolidge, FDR, Truman.
Did you say Lincoln?
Ooh. Yeah, of course.
I was making sure.
Of course.
Okay, go ahead. You're up to Truman.
No, I missed Hoover, actually. So going back to Wilson, Harding, Coolidge, Hoover, FDR, Truman, Eisenhower, JFK, LBJ, JFK, LBJ, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama!
That was impressive.
That was beast.
44th president. And when Eddie Grove, when he says something's beast, it's beast.
That was
very impressive. You got through that. So,
I think Sarah's been spending a lot of time with Johnny. I really do.
767. Actually, they sit right next to each other. So, 767. 767-5-9. No, what are we on? 767-5-5998, and we will screen the calls and get those on the air. So I think the court cases that you were doing, it's very good. You have them all in front of you there. Korematsu, did we get up to that one?
No, we didn't.
No,
that's an important. We have a couple more important ones. We got to talk about Plessy versus Ferguson, Brown versus the Board of Education.
We talked about those.
Okay, I was repairing something. And Korematsu.
Is
a very important, that's a 14th Amendment case.
It is.
1944.
Why don't we explain what happened to Fred Korematsu?
Well, you can take it.
All right, thank you. Fred Korematsu, well, he was, I'm not sure about all of the details, so if you want to back me up on this one.
Okay, we should probably start at the beginning. As you know, during World War II, the United States implemented, what were they called?
Internment camps.
Thank you. Internment camps for Japanese Americans because of high paranoia against the Japanese. And so basically Korematsu, he was taken to an internment camp?
He was removed from his home in California and taken to an internment camp. And he said that this violated his right.
Constitutional right.
His constitutional right. I'm pretty sure it was the
as
Fifth
a citizen
Amendment.
Of the United States.
The 14th. Fifth Amendment that he 14. Argued was
14.
Was
it wasn't it a 14th Amendment case?
Yes.
Oh, never mind.
Yes, indeed. Now you
is
see
it?
The
wait. What is the Fifth Amendment?
At first,
like,
there was a curfew.
Right to remain silent.
At first,
right?
There was a curfew, and the curfew was affirmed by a Hirabayashi versus the United
Fifth
States.
Fifth Amendment is. Is
due process of law is the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah. So.
And what happened here was with the internment camps. You have a situation where Fred Korematsu, who considered himself to be an American patriot, he refused. He said, I refuse to go to these internment camps. And then he's taken against his will. He goes and he says, I have no reason to be here. And I am a citizen of the United States of America. And the courts, it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the question became, is Executive Order 9066 constitutional? Executive Order 9066 said that in times of a war, the American president can do things or suspend habeas corpus and do things that he normally wouldn't be able to do. And what did the Supreme Court say regarding internment as a decision? Did they side with FDR or Mr. Korematsu?
Well, they sided with FDR, of course.
They said that internment camps and presidential power to do such things were very constitutional if the said people, in this case the Japanese, posed a threat to national security. And in FDR's view, they did. And so internment camps of the Japanese during World War II was ruled constitutional.
But hey, in 1983, Reagan did give $20,000 to each Japanese family. That's so we paid them back, don't worry.
The United States said sorry.
Vindiction? Yeah, the epilogue vindiction of 1983. So we paid them back. We're even.
I'm not sure the Japanese felt that way, but yeah.
All right, so we did Brown versus the Board of Education.
Mr. Hoff, who is the author of that book that you told us about?
A Nisei Daughter by Monica Sone.
Thank you.
And that was a book detailing the horrors of the internment camps and that it wasn't so good. Milton Eisenhower, who's related to Ike, went on the TV and said, "Don't worry about our Japanese friends. They're going to go to these wonderful summer camps, and they're lovely." And then the truth of the matter was they weren't summer camps. The internment camps were concentration camps by what a concentration camp is by definition, but they changed the name after we found out what happened with the Holocaust, and they took away the name from the concentration
probably
camp, and they made it an internment camps. So once again, you can call us, 767-5998. Dylan is transferring over a call as we speak. So, all right, here we go.
Hello.
And hold on. Yeah, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, can we talk about the Iran hostage crisis?
The Iranian,
yes.
The Iranian hostage crisis, sure. What in particular? Just an overview of it?
Sure.
Okay.
Is that a Carter?
Thank you for the call. The Iranian, that was under Carter. And
was that on the...
In 1979.
It was.
Yeah, who wants to take this one?
Not me.
No one wants to take this one?
Well, what happened was there was a revolution, a civil war in Iran against the Shah of Iran, who was supported by the United States government because of his oil policies. He gave a lot of oil to the U.S., and the U.S. gave him a lot of support. So when Iranian nationals had a revolution, they invaded the embassy, the United States embassy in Iran, and they held many of the occupants hostage. And what Jimmy Carter did is he sent in secret troops to try to free these hostages. And what happened was there was a helicopter crash, and it became very public and very embarrassing for Jimmy Carter. One of the stains on his reputation, which led to him not being reelected. And one of the good things people thought he did was he negotiated and was able to return the hostages to the U.S. and so that was Carter's fumble and Reagan's pickup.
Did you just say Reagan?
Reagan.
You know, Marco
is the British
years. Is from Britain. Eventually, at some point, is that what they call him in Britain? Reagan?
I don't know.
One of the most embarrassing facets of the hostage crisis was that Carter sent in a helicopter to try to rescue the hostages, and the helicopter crashed.
Eddie Grove, Marco said that 2 minutes ago.
Oh, sorry.
What, you don't listen to him when he speaks?
No, I was trying to get another caller.
Oh, I understand, Eddie. You can't say that, Eddie.
Well, actually,
and you want to be president? Jeez.
Well, no, he can't. Eddie can't be president because he knows too much.
Eddie wasn't born in America, that's why.
No, he knows too much about Napoleon.
He's born on Mars.
All right. So
it's the Special Olympics.
A good thing out of Carter's administration.
Oh, thank you.
Because, you know, everybody makes fun of him. Okay. The Camp David Accords in 1977, it was a conflict between Israel and Egypt, but under Carter's administration, Egypt recognized Israel as an official state, and by that, Israel gave Egypt the Sinai Peninsula.
Sinai.
Yeah.
So Nixon didn't do that, right? That was on the final today.
That was on the final.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I didn't get it wrong.
You know, Jimmy Carter's foreign policy was very humanitarian. He wanted, he like Wilson, had moral values in consideration when he looked at his foreign policy. And so he was actually awarded the Nobel Peace Prize after his presidency, even though he many people didn't saw him as a weak president.
Yes, and the interesting thing about that time period, the 1970s, and this will pop up. There will be questions about the 1970s on the AP exam, and it's probably going to have something to do with high inflation, lots of unemployment, not a very good time to be an American, high oil prices, oil shortages. We know about the gas crisis where you had to go online to get gas, and you had to – we got music going now. Yes. these are things that happened in the 70s. The 70s was not a positive time to be an American. And luckily we had the Miracle on Ice that happened in 1980 that cheered us all up.
Woohoo!
Yes.
Nice. I have a question.
Yes.
All right. There was a question on the one of the review tests, and it was like, in the high inflation of the 1960s and the 1970s was caused by ... And the right answer was social, like, welfare programs from the Vietnam War.
I'd have to see the question.
High inflation of the 1960s and 70s like entirely caused by social welfare programs?
I believe I have that question.
That seems a little, I don't know.
Yeah, that seems like a stretch.
The high inflation rates of the late 1960s and early 1970s were primarily a result of, the answer is C, spending on social welfare programs and the Vietnam War.
And the Vietnam War. I thought it said.
No.
The Vietnam War did take a lot of American dollars.
You got to read every bit of the question. Another little tip that we can give you here on the WDOT review session is to read every word of the question, because sometimes, see, you may know all the history for the AP exam. You may know everything about the Dred Scott Act or a Dred Scott case. You may know a lot about it, but the question will have some type of contextualization to do about the Dred Scott. So you really need to know things backwards and forwards on many of the major issues. And also, sometimes it seems to me that the questions get harder after number 50. And I can't tell you how many of the – when I'm grading Scantrons, that how many of those are just debacles on the back after doing really well on the front. So you may want to take more time after number 50 and say, hey, these questions are going to be harder. Maybe I should take a little bit more time. I wouldn't recommend starting on number 51 and doing those first, because those could be very difficult. You may get frustrated, and you may start to cry in the middle of the exam, and we don't want that.
Well, what I like to do is take the exam backwards, recommended by Johnny Schechner, if you're listening, and because the later questions do tend to be a lot harder. So then by the time you're at the end of the test and you're rushing through those last 50 questions, it's kind of a relief, and you're kind of – you feel like you're getting all the last 50 questions right, because they're so much easier than the – last 50.
Yeah, if you have the if you are tough and you are able to we talked when we opened the show about people who stress out over this test, and they start to just kind of just they can't, you know, maybe they're testing on at a 5 level in class and they're getting like a 1 or a 2 at the exam because they panic. If you have the fortitude to do that, go ahead and take the test backwards. If you're scared to do that, just take it normally. But do be aware that the questions 51 through 80 are going to be very difficult. 767-5998. Feel
Don't
free
we
to
have
call.
100?
What?
Do I have 100?
No, you have 80 questions 80. Coming up.
Woo-hoo.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
One of the practices had 100, but it's not going
to
be 100.
The AP used to have 100 questions on the test. It used to be.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it used to be 100 like in the 80s, and now we're down to 80. And I have the reason why, I'm not quite sure. But the tests seem to be harder in the 1980s than they are today. So I don't know if that means society, we're not as smart as we used to be. But, hey, it's great. It makes the test easier for you guys.
Mr. Began says we're not.
What, Mr. Began says that they're harder now?
No, it says that we're not as smart as we used to be.
Oh, well, that's because Mr. Began, he grew up during the Enlightenment.
Mr. Began's retired!
He grew up in the Enlightenment, and he went to school at John Locke and Jean-Jacques Rousseau. That is why. So let's talk about some of the bigger things.
Somebody's
as the phone
advocate of the wheel.
The phone is ringing. Once again, we have two lines, 767-5998. We're going to talk about what?
So sad. I once said T3 and no color again.
Oh, T3? That means it's coming from inside the building, so You just pick it up and whatever. So let's talk about some of the bigger issues that we got through a lot of them so far. We've talked about Reconstruction. We've talked about progressivism, populism. We did some New Deal. Let's talk about when you may get a call about religion. We're transferring over a call. So when we'll answer the caller, and then we'll get back to talking about religion and things like that. Oh, Sarah Pierce, just hang up on somebody.
No!
Hit the 997 line.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
My question is on Mr. Kress. He said that one of the four topics to know about for the essays was Jacksonian democracy. I'm just wondering, what about Jacksonian democracy do you recommend we know?
Jacksonian democracy is quite the topic of choice.
Yeah, people have been calling up with that. Well, we spoke before. We'll answer it again. Sarah, why don't you tell them about the major issues?
Well, first of all, Jacksonian democracy, the basis of his policy was universal white manhood suffrage. And what else did we say?
We also talked about the vetoing of the bank.
Right, the veto of the bank.
Jackson, he was interesting because in some ways he favored business because he enforced the tariff of abominations,
very
but he also
industry.
Right, he also vetoed the bank.
He vetoed the bank and he implemented specie circular, my favorite. Circular.
And more pertinent to the actual democracy is the first national convention was under Jackson, and also the property qualifications were taken away
and
this time.
Also,
and the direct primary.
That was a very good point. The election between John Quincy Adams and Jackson, because John Quincy Adams had stolen the vote from Jackson in the corrupt bargain, Jackson was very angered in the next election, and so the campaign really focused on the personalities of the two candidates and their image rather than the actual topics. And so it really just it started the shaping of modern democracy and of modern campaigning.
Right, that was the first campaign where presidents actually would campaign to the public instead of just write letters to rich people. They actually went out and gave speeches and such.
And that ended up helping Jackson a great deal because he was a war hero, right?
Yeah, he had the reputation of the Battle of New Orleans.
Exactly. He was a war hero, and we all know that the public loves war heroes.
He was the politician of the public.
Yes.
Okay.
He reminds me of George Bush.
All right, thank you
for
calling.
Better.
No.
He's an idiot.
Okay, so we're going to actually take... we're going to take a two-second break here because Dylan is going to stop this. We're going to kind of try to edit this together so that you can have it on demand tonight. So I'm going to chop the highlights, if you will.
We're done?
No, we're continuing. We have to open up a new file so we can save it. We can't save like 3 hours at a time, or else like the computer will put up a white flag.
If anybody out there wants to order me some food, I'm
so
starving.
Once again, as we'll reload the phone lines, and you're opening a new one. You ready? Don't save it.
All right,
don't save it. Just leave it open, and I'm going to take care of it
later.
We'll
be back after a quick little break. Enjoy Jurassic Park theme music.
I love Jurassic Park.